Normally, on Mother's Day, I will preach a message to the mothers. And I will encourage them or challenge them in some way to be the kind of mother that God wants them to be. But today we're going to turn it around. Today I'm not going to preach to the mothers. Today I'm going to preach to those of us whose mothers are still with us. Today I'm going to preach to the children. And I'm going to give us today some practical advice on how to love your mother. That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how to love your mother. And I want to tell you in advance that this is not a doctrinal message, and I don't claim that it is. It is a very practical message. It is just really in the form of advice. These are ways that you can really let your mother know that you love her. Several years ago, I was preaching through the book of 1 Corinthians. It is our practice here, if you're visiting, to preach through books of the Bible. So today is quite different. But I like preaching through various books of the Bible. Right now, we're going through the book of 1 Peter. We're in chapter 2. And we've been doing that since the first of the year. I hope you'll come back next Sunday and maybe get in on some of that. But when I was preaching through the book of 1 Corinthians, I got to chapter 13. And in chapter 13, we looked at the word charity. And faith, hope, charity, but the greatest of these is charity. And it's often translated what? Love. It's often translated love. But I want to tell you that charity, it's a lot more than love. It really, that when you say love, that doesn't really capture it based upon our modern definition of love. And I'm going to tell you why. Because charity, the word charity tells us that love is not just an intangible concept. Love is something that we do. Love is something that we decide by an act of the will. And then we express that act of the will by what we do. Now let me just tell you, this is the exact opposite of the world's idea of love. Because the world's idea of love is that love is just a feeling that overwhelms me and overtakes me, and I have little or no control over it. We even have a term, we call it fall in love. Let me tell you the problem with that term, falling in love. The problem is that a fall, by definition, is an accident. If I go tumbling down these stairs during this message, trust me, that was not on purpose. That was an accident. If I fall, it's on an accident. And let me tell you something. The Bible does not teach that we love by accident. It is a definite decision of the will. We decide to love. But think about the songs that the world sings about love. They all have to do with this feeling that just overwhelmed me, and I didn't see it coming. I really didn't want it to happen, but it just kind of jumped on me like a virus. You know, I mean, think about it. I'm going to date myself here. How many of y'all remember Elvis? Okay, he's left the building, just so you know. But think about it. Think about Elvis. I'll do my imitation, all right? I take off on Elvis. Sorry, here we go. But I can't help falling in love with you. Hey, if this preaching thing plays out, we can go to Vegas. Amen. But now just think about that. I can't help falling in love with you. In other words, it's just a feeling that I had little or no control over. Now I'm really going to date myself. There's a song from the 40s, and no, I was not alive. But there's a song from the 40s that says, you may, one enchanted evening, you may see a stranger, you may see a stranger across a crowded room. And the song goes on to talk about how I see this stranger, I don't even know her name, but I see her across a crowded room and bam, I'm in love. That's not the biblical concept of love. The biblical concept of love is not that it's intangible, not that it's something that happens to us accidentally that we have no control over. The biblical concept of love is that love is a decision and it is expressed in what we do. Are you with me today? Say amen. Here's the message. I want to give you, I think I have five of them. I want to give you five ways that you can really let your mother know how much you love her. Number one, tell her. Tell her. There is a philosophy that is especially prominent among men, and it goes like this. I don't have to tell them that I love them. They already know it. I don't have to tell my wife I love her. She already knows it. I told her 30 years ago when we got married, and if I change my mind, I'll let her know. I don't have to tell my children that I love them. They already know it. Well, you know, that's great that they know it, but you still need to tell them. Your mother needs to hear it. When's the last time you just looked her in the eye and said, you know what, Mom? I really love you. I want to read to you a letter that was written to the advice columnist that goes by the name Dear Abby. And this applies to the husband-wife relationship, but it would also apply to the mother-child relationship. It would apply to any relationship. It goes like this. Dear Abby, I enlisted in the military shortly after Pearl Harbor. 36 days later, I was on my way to the Philippines. En route, the Philippines fell to the Japanese, and we were rerouted to Australia. 11 days after we landed, I met the most beautiful girl in the world. On our first date, I told her I was going to marry her. I did, 18 months later, while on a 10-day R&R leave from New Guinea. After more than 57 years of marriage and two children, my beloved Mary died 5 days before Christmas. Although we agreed that our ashes were to be scattered over the mountains, I could not part with hers. While Mary was alive, she would frequently say, "You don't know how much I love you." I'd reply, "Likewise." I never said, "I love you." Now her ashes are on my dresser, where I tell her several times a day how much I love her, but it's too late. Although I wrote poetry to her, I could not bring myself to say the three words I knew she wanted most to hear. As my dearest was dying and we thought she was comatose, I told her, "There aren't enough words to tell you how much I love you." A few hours later, she whispered, "Not enough words," and died. The reason I'm writing is to urge men to express their feelings while their loved ones are alive. I don't know why, but many men are reluctant to express the depth of their feelings. And it is signed, "Missing Mary in Colorado." Now, although that applies to the husband-wife relationship, I would stop and just ask you today, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, no matter how young your mother is, no matter how old she is, when's the last time you just looked at your mother and said, "You know what, Mom? I love you. I really love you." You say, "Well, she already knows it." She needs to hear it. You say, "Well, I'm just not turned that way." Turn around. Amen. The second thing I want to say today is this. Not only tell her, but number two, touch her. Touch her. I remember several years ago, there was a television commercial. And it was about parents showing love to their children. And the tagline was, "Have you hugged your kid today?" How many of y'all remember that? They even had a little jingle. "Have you hugged your kid today?" Y'all remember that? "Have you helped them on their way? Oh, give them love, 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 love." Boy, I'm singing a lot today for some reason. I want to ask you a question. When was the last time, if your mother's still living, when was the last time that you hugged your mother? I want you to think about this. When you were born, apart from a doctor or a nurse, your mother was the first person that ever touched you. Well, for crying out loud, even before you were born, she wrapped you in her womb for 9 months. When you were little, she held you, she cuddled you, and she comforted you when you cried. And when you got a little older and became a toddler, she comforted you when you got hurt. By the way, nobody can fix an ouchie or a boo-boo like mama. I can remember several years ago, I was back here where the ball fields are. I was watching 4- and 5-year-olds play soccer. You haven't lived till you've seen 4- and 5-year-olds play soccer. And I remember Robbie Dodd, who was 5 at the time, fell down and skinned his knee. He got up and started crying. He ran off that field. He ran right straight to the stands where the fans were. He ran right past me, although he knew me and we were friends. He ran right past Mamaw and Papaw, although he knew them and knew that they loved him. He ran right past Daddy. And guess who he ran straight to? He ran straight to Mama. You remember that, Janet? Nobody can fix a boo-boo like Mama. The entire time that you were growing up, your mother touched you. She changed your diapers. She combed your hair. She wiped the food off of your face. Nowadays, the mothers want these sanitary wipes. You know what a sanitary wipe was when I was a kid? Mama would spit in a napkin and then wipe your face. Or she'd just spit on her fingers and wipe your face. When you were little, Mama was the one that held the back of your head, held that Kleenex up to your nose and said, "Now blow, blow." I have a nephew named Andrew. He's a grown man now in his 40s. But when he was about 4 or 5 years old, one day he had to blow his nose really bad. And his mama held his little head and put the Kleenex up and said, "Now blow." And I mean, did he ever blow? I mean, it was like a Category 5 hurricane hitting that napkin. And she said, "Now blow." And boy, I mean, he blew and blew and blew. And when he got, and it's a true story, when he got all done, he looked up at his mom and he said, "Mama, what's 4 plus 4? She said, "2? No, his mother's smarter than that. She's smarter than that. He said, "Mama, what's 4 plus 4? She said, "8. And then she said, "Oh, good, that's what I thought." She said, "Well, why do you want to know?" Andrew said, "For a minute there, I thought I blew my brains out." That's what he's thought I blew my brains out. The whole time you were growing up, your mother touched you. Hey, listen, if you had a good mom, there may have even been times when she turned you over her knee and reached out and touched you. I love the story about the little boy that was in bed and said, "Mom, I need a glass of water." She said, "Go to sleep. You don't need water." A few minutes later, he said, "Mama, bring me a glass of water." She said, "I said, go to sleep. You don't need water." A few minutes later, "Mama, bring me a glass of water." She said, "If you ask again, I'm coming in there to spank you." A few minutes later, he said, "Mom, would you come in here to spank me? Bring me a glass of water." Sounds like something I would have said. Now, here's the point that I'm making. When her duty, listen now, when her duties as a mother have ended, she still wants and needs your touch. Sometimes when my wife and I go to visit the nursing home, we'll be walking down the hallway of that nursing home, and there are normally a lot of elderly women in wheelchairs in the hallway, and it's usually mostly women because women tend to outlive men by 5 to 10 years. And these women are sitting in their wheelchairs in the hallway of that nursing home, and many of them look like they're completely out of it. They look like they're in a different world. Many of them are not very alert. And sometimes they look like they're just staring off into the distance. And then they see Nancy and I walking down the hall. And so many times that when they see Nancy and I walking down the hall, even though we don't know them and they don't know us, when they see us, their face will just brighten up. And then you know what they do? They want to touch us. And they want to touch our face. When's the last time you hugged your mother? She needs your touch. The third thing I want to say today by way of practical advice is this. Thank her. I want you to think for a moment about all the things that your mother has done for you over the years. I want you to think about how many meals she cooked, how many loads of laundry she did, how many messes she cleaned up that were of your making. My mom's here today and she knows this is true. When I was a teenager, there for a while, I got really messy. I'm a clean freak now, but back then, I was really messy. And I can remember one day, my mom actually came to me when I was a teenager, and she said, "I'm not going into your room to clean it up anymore. If you want to live like that, you can live like that. You can live in squalor for all I care. I'm just going to shut the door." And of course, within 24 hours, she'd already gone in there and cleaned it up. My brother's here today. Dan, raise your hand. I remember one day my brother and some of his friends did a favor for a family that lived out in the country, and to repay them, they gave my brother a goat, a live goat. So, and we lived in town. So here he comes home pulling a live goat with a rope. And my mom said, "Son, you can't keep a goat." "But mama, they gave him to me." She said, "I don't care. You can't have a goat." "But mama, you said I could have a pet, but not a goat. You can't have a goat." She said, "Where would you keep a goat?" He said, "In my room." She said, "Honey, you can't keep a goat in your room." He said, "Why not?" She said, "What about the smell?" And Danny said, "He'll just have to get used to it like I did." That's a joke. That didn't happen. My brother's room did not smell like a goat. But seriously, think about all that a mother does. Just think about it. I found a little poem that I think expresses it. You know, back years ago when they took a census, if a woman was a homemaker, you know what they'd write on the census form? No occupation. Oh, can you believe that? Hey, I learned a long time ago, don't ever ask a woman, do you work or do you stay home? Don't ever ask a woman that. There's no harder work than staying at home. My hat's off to stay-at-home moms. But they used to write on the census form, no occupation. And somebody wrote this, and I love this. It says, "She rises up at break of day, and through her tasks she races. She cooks the meal as best she may, and scrubs the children's faces. The school books, lunches, backpacks too, all need consideration. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. When breakfast dishes are all done, she bakes some cookies maybe. She cleans the rooms up one by one with one eye watching baby. The mending pile she then attacks by way of variation. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. She maybe irons a little while and presses pants for daddy. She welcomes with a cheery smile returning lass and laddie. A hearty dinner next she cooks, no time for relaxation. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. For homework that the children have, the evening scarce is ample. To mother dear they always turn for help with each example. In grammar and geography she finds her relaxation. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation." Isn't that good? Let's just once again thank our mothers for all they do. For all they do. You know, I'm not only grateful for all the tangible things that my mother has done for me. I'm not only thankful for all the meals, all the loads of laundry, all the messes she cleaned up. I'm thankful for the intangibles. And I tell her this often. Anytime I write a card to her, I always mention this. I'm thankful for her encouragement and her support and her loyalty. Let me tell you something. Anything that I have ever tried to do in my life, anything, whether it be a decision to go to college at the age of 26 when I was already married with kids, or whether it be to become the pastor of this church, my mother has always been the one who has said, "Honey, you can do it. I know you can do it." She always says, "Honey, you can do anything you put your mind to." Mothers are so loyal. Don't you love that? I heard about a little boy that was on a baseball team. And right in the middle of the game, the coach called over the little boy and said, "Son, come here." Little boy walked over, looked up at the coach and said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Son, you do understand this is just a game, right?" He said, "Yes, sir." He said, "And you do understand sometimes you win, sometimes you lose." "Yes, sir." He said, "Then surely you understand that sometimes you get a hit and sometimes you strike out." "Yes, sir." "And son, you do understand, don't you, that when the umpire says strike three, it's not okay to tell him that he's blind. You understand that, right?" "Yes, sir." "And you do understand that when the umpire says strike three, it's not okay to cuss at him, right?" He said, "Yes, sir." And the coach said, "Good. Then will you please go to the stands and explain all that to your mother?" Can I get a witness today, Mom? Yeah. Not the cussing part. Don't do that. Number four, B be patient with her. Now, this is especially true as she gets older. Be patient with her. As our parents begin to age, one of the sweetest ways that we can love them is to just be patient with them. How many of y'all have ever heard of James Dobson and Focus on the Family? James Dobson got a hold of a letter that a mother wrote to her kids on the occasion of her 80th birthday. And I want to read to you what this 80-year-old mother wrote to her adult children. This is what she wrote. Dear children, I suppose my upcoming birthday started my thoughts along these lines. You never forget my birthday or any other special day without a gift. I realize the problems you must have in choosing a gift because I have what I need in material possessions. This is a good time to tell you that what I really want are things I can never get enough of, yet they are free. I want the intangibles. I want just a little more of your time. And that's selfish of me, I know, because you have your own children and grandchildren who want your time. And also you need time for yourselves. But all I want is just a few unhurried minutes. I would like for you to come and sit with me and for you to be relaxed. It makes me so nervous when you sit on the edge of your chair and keep looking at your watch. We can talk or we can be silent. I would just like for us to be together. You children who live out of town are thoughtful to call me on the phone, but I would like it if you would just write once or twice a month. Then I could look forward to reading and rereading your letters. I don't always hear every word you say on the phone, and a letter or two would help me greatly. I need your patience when I don't hear what you say the first time, so please don't be annoyed. I know how tiresome it is to always be repeating, but sometimes I must ask you to repeat. I need your patience when I think too much about the past. I need your patience with my slowness and my set ways. I want you to be tolerant with what the years have done to me physically. Please be understanding about my personal care habits. I really can't see when my dress is dirty or the floor needs cleaning. I spill things. I lose things. I get unduly excited when I try to figure out my bank statements. I take too many naps, I know, because you have said, quit spending all your time sleeping. Well, sometimes when I sleep in the daytime, it was because I was awake half the night. At other times, sleep helps to pass the day. When I have nothing but time on my hands, a 15-minute nap seems like an hour. Well, there you have it. Time, patience, and understanding. These are the priceless gifts that I want. Over and over again, I take my Bible, thank God I can still read, and I read what Paul wrote in Philippians 4:11. I have learned in whatever state I am therewith to be content, but oh, how trying. I know what it is to be in need and what it is to have more than enough. I remember how your father and I struggled through the Depression, and then how wonderful it was when we finally had a good nest egg and had saved something for old age. I am thankful I can still take care of myself financially. Finally, in his letter, Paul wrote, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. I know I can too. Maybe I can't do all I want to the way I used to, but how comforting it is to know his eye is on the sparrow and I know he cares for me. I guess being 80 isn't so bad after all. God has blessed me so much. Love, Mom. The last thing I want to tell you today is this. Honor her. There are only two commands in the Bible concerning children. One is to obey, the other is to honor. We saw them both in our text today that Pastor West read. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. That's number one. Number two, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. So we have two commands. One is to obey, one is to honor. The first command is temporary, because when you grow up and become an adult, when you leave your parents' home and when you establish your own center of authority, you will no longer be under that obligation to obey them. But The second command to honor them is a lifelong command. It is a lifelong command. It does not say to honor your parents if they are honorable. It says to honor them because they're your parents. Real quickly, in closing, I want to give you three ways to honor your mother and your father. Number one, show them respect. Show them respect. Showing disrespect to parents is such a grievous sin in the eyes of God that in the Old Testament, under the theocracy, it was a capital offense, punishable by death. Now, we can be thankful we don't still live in those days. But just to show you how seriously God takes this, disrespecting parents, let me read to you from Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 9. For everyone that curseth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. He that curseth his father or his mother, his blood shall be on his hand. Let me just tell you that Nancy and I have raised two kids, and there is one thing that we never, ever tolerated in our home, and that was blatant disrespect. Now, there were some faults that we might overlook, maybe even some acts of disobedience that we might overlook, but the one thing we never overlooked was blatant disrespect. And let me say this, I never allowed my children, and especially my son, to talk to somebody disrespectfully who had done as much for them as Nancy had. Dad, when you hear your son or daughter speak disrespectfully to your wife, it is your responsibility to correct them immediately. I can remember on one occasion, we were in a hotel. We've got great kids. My son is the kindest, most loving man. He's so sweet, and he calls us, and just so kind and so sweet. But like most teenagers, he went through that phase, and especially like teenage boys, struggling to find his independence. And I remember we were in a hotel one day, and I was in the bathroom, and the kids and Nancy were out in the room, and John spoke very disrespectfully to his mother. Like I said, he was just going through a phase. He said something very disrespectful to his mother, blatantly disrespectful. I'll never forget. I charged out of that bathroom. I walked up to him. I put my finger in his chest, and I said, "You will not talk to my wife that way." I said, "She was my wife before she was your mother. And if somebody at work spoke to her that way, we'd have to step outside." I said, "You're not going to speak to my wife like that." That was the last time he ever tried. Respect them. Respect them. Show them respect. Number two, heed their counsel. Proverbs 1, 8 and 9 says, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck." And when it says that your parents' counsel are chains about your neck, those are not chains of slavery, kids. That's ornamentation. It means that heeding their counsel will make your life more beautiful. Now, you may be sitting there thinking, "Yeah, but I'm smarter than my parents. I'm more educated than my parents." Well, you may be more educated, but let me tell you, there's one thing your parents have over you, and that is experience. They've lived longer than you. They're further down the road, and they know some things that you don't know. I want you to imagine that your whole family is going to travel from here to California. And imagine that your parents left on Monday. You can't leave till Wednesday because of work, so you're 2 days behind them. So I want you to imagine that your parents call you on the phone and say, "Hey, when you get to Kansas City, you're going to want to avoid this road because the bridge is out and there's a detour." You say, "Well, thank you." Then they call the next day and they say, "Hey, when you get to this city, you're going to want to stay at this hotel. It's reasonably priced, it's clean, and they have a great breakfast." You say, "Well, thank you." They call a couple of days later and they say, "Hey, when you get to this place, you're going to want to get off here and you're going to want to see this. It's really something to see. I think that you'll really enjoy it." You say, "Well, thank you." All right, now let me ask you a question. Does all of that mean they're smarter than you? Yes or no? No, what does it mean? It means they're further down the road. Children, listen to me today. Your parents are further down the road than you are. By the way, that's why they do seem to get smarter as you get older. Mark Twain said, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years. Someone else said, when you were 16, you thought your parents didn't know anything, and when you turned 19, you were sure of it. At 25, you thought you were light years ahead of them, but by the time you turned 30, you began to think that maybe they did know something. At 40, you were amazed at how much smarter they had become, and now at 50, you think they are geniuses. And then the last thing is this: if you want to honor your mother and your father, live honorably. Listen, your parents, are you listening today? Your parents are an extension of them. Here's what that means. That means when you live honorably, you honor them. And when you live shamefully, you bring shame upon them. That's the reason Proverbs 29:15 says, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. I have always enjoyed playing with telemarketers. You know, you get these spam calls. I've always enjoyed playing with them. You say, well, you shouldn't do that. I didn't ask him to call me. Had a guy call one time wanting to sell me accident and injury insurance. So I put on my fake voice and I said, I don't need no accident insurance. He said, sir, everybody needs it. I said, but I don't drive. He said, sir, this will cover you. And this is not a joke. This actually happened. He said, this will cover you even if you get injured as a pedestrian. I said, I am not a pedestrian. I'm a Baptist. He got all kinds of mad. He said, sir, I did not say Presbyterian. I said pedestrian. I said, well, don't get mad. I like them all. Click. I've got a new thing I've started doing just recently. I've got a new tactic, and I only do this if I know it's a spam call. If it's a legitimate salesperson, I will not do this. But if I know that it's a scam, I've got a new thing that I'll do. You say, well, how do you know if it's a scam? Number one, the IRS never calls. They only write letters. They never call. We had one call here the other day at the church and asked for Nancy, and then said, this is the IRS, and we just want you to know that you're going to need to get this account settled right now because, quote, the cops are on their way. Not the policemen, the cops are on their way. So when I know it's a scam, I've started something new. When they call me up and say, yes, this is the IRS, and we need to talk to you about your account, here's my new thing. I did this just the other day. I said, okay, but first, can I ask you a question? Yes. Do you have a mother? Yes. Why do you ask if I have a mother? And then I say, does your mother know that she has raised a scammer? Now, I don't do it to be mean. I want to set them thinking. What I'm trying to say is you're bringing shame on your mother. You know, most men, no matter how wicked they are, even most evil men at least have a soft spot for their mother. And so that's what I started saying. Does your mother know that she raised a scammer? What? I said, does your mother know that she raised a thief and a scammer? Click. When you live honorably, it brings honor to your parents. When you live shamefully, it brings shame upon them. So these are just three ways that you can honor mother and father. Show them respect. Heed their counsel. Live honorably. And so what I've given you today are just some ways that you can demonstrate love to your mother. Tell her. Touch her. Thank her. Be patient with her. And honor her. I want to close with a little video. And the name of the video is A Letter to Mom.
Hey, Mom. I want to take the time today and thank you. I know. You never want any thanks. But today we pause to say it. The gift you've given us, this family, it's something that lasts way beyond a holiday or a birthday or even a lifetime. You can't wrap it in the pretty paper you always seem to find for us. This is different, and I think it's because you're different. I've watched you love, well, people who were hard to love in a family that didn't always stay tidy or always love in return. That's love that can't be contained. It spills into all the other generations. You have given me gifts I can't repay. You hand out grace without asking for any back, and mercy when you have nothing to gain. Quiet strength in the loudest moments. You love me when I'm too busy to notice. But I've heard your wise words when you didn't think I listened. And don't think I haven't noticed that old worn-out Bible of yours. I am reminded constantly of your sincere faith. I can't imagine the prayers you prayed for all of us. All the oil you burned through long midnights. I'm starting to understand what it means to have a mom heart. I know I can be the kind of mom I want to be. Because of you. Thank you. For everything. Your life has changed mine.